In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. In our last interview, our guest Josephine Grace ended with a crystal clear warning to those who would interfere with the free will of humankind wielding organized harassment techniques such as microwave attacks. The perils affecting human free will again surfaced in the 2013 interview with Mark Passio, who said the primary goal of the Church of Satan is to enslave humans. You can boil down more past interviews to the issue of humans being corralled toward a reality where free will is slowly replaced by a consciousness simulation, a matrix, where as generations pass, the illusion of another reality takes over. It's a timeless theme written in stone, rendered in print from the Bible to sacred text. A similar narrative flowed from the pen of our guest, Sophia Stewart. She's described as a child prodigy, prolific writer, poet, and creative genius. She grew up in New York City, and her gifts were recognized early on when she passed the New York State Board of Regents examination in junior high school. From there, she attended the City University of New York, graduated with a Bachelor of Arts degree in journalism and minors in law and psychology. She had great mentors, including Max Siegel, a former journalist with the New York Times. Sophia is the author of the book, script, and movie treatment titled The Third Eye. While in college in the spring of 1981, Sophia created that six-page screen treatment and copyrighted it in 1981. In the fall of 1983, Sophia created a 45-page manuscript by the same title. She registered her work with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Writers Guild of America in February of 1983. In the summer of 1986, Sophia sent both treatment and script to Andy and Larry Wachowski in response to an advertisement in a national magazine seeking science fiction stories. The Wachowskis didn't respond and didn't return the copyrighted works. By 1999, it was concluded Sophia Stewart's work was misappropriated and acquired by the Wachowski brothers, Warner Brothers, Fox, Joel Silver, James Cameron, and Gail Ann Hurd. The Third Eye manuscript contained the foundation of blockbuster films The Terminator and The Matrix. It had grossed more than $2.5 billion. In 2005, Sophia Stewart hired a team of four attorneys to pursue her criminal copyright infringement RICO claims in the California case. However, those attorneys were also hired by Warner Brothers and were there to gain her trust and sabotage the case. Nearly a decade later, after years of delays, deliberate obstruction of justice, civil and due process violations, and many more crimes, Sophia Stewart was able to present evidence and prove damages against the defendants. In September of 2014, Sophia was compensated. She is the sole creator, author, and legal owner of all Matrix and Terminator IPs, trademarks, copyrights, movie, TV, and cable rights, video games, merchandise, and all other derivative products and services connected to both franchises. Sophia joins us to talk more about the legal battles she was involved with in federal court to protect her copyrights, and we also talk about her prophetic writing style. Sophia, welcome to Another News.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Sophia, before we talk about the copyright infringement litigation, can you give listeners some background on where you grew up? What was your life like at that time and how you became interested in writing?
Well, I grew up in New York City. I'm a New Yorker. I was writing early on from the elementary. I started writing from seventh grade, actually. And I had a college professor who taught at the university. He told us that he knew nothing about English, but he taught professional writing, and that's what he could teach us. So, like Venus and Serena, they started out playing tennis, I believe, when they was in elementary, same as myself, doing writing. And Tiger Woods started out early when he was, I think, 3 years old. So if you want to become a master, then you have to start out early, honing your gifts. growing up in the Bronx, Bronx is one of the boroughs, it's five boroughs of New York. But I didn't live in just the Bronx. I also lived in Harlem at one time. And I used to go to the Apollo all the time. I think I've seen just about every act that come through the Apollo. I used to be there every weekend. The Apollo is on 125th Street. I used to live on 124th Street in Morningside. And then, of course, I lived in the Bronx. I lived over there on Fort Independence and not too far from Tracy Towers and DeWitt Clinton High School. So I used to see the high school students coming all the time, going, you know, off the train, going to school. Grew up in a time where hip-hop was born. I used to live in Manhattan on West 86th Street and Broadway. So I used to live also, you know, there. And so growing up in New York, you learn a lot. It's very cultured. I used to work for a company that, you know, that did clothing and stuff. And I used to work for an advertiser, Geyer McAllister Advertising and Marketing. And I used to do some auditing, and I scored a 98 for the IRS exam to go to work for them. I used to work for the post office when I was a teenager, me and a couple of my really good friends and stuff. My graduation class, I got a degree in journalism, a double major in law and psychology. All the stuff that you see on the internet is nothing but a bunch of smears. I wasn't in no place in those 70s, unemployed, in no 30-year case. Nobody in the world history book of Guinness have a 30-year-old case. No, I was in school in the 80s at USC and the City University of New York. And my case was only for 7 years.
Well, Sophia, I realize you've told this story many times, yet still, because of suppression and disinformation out there about you and your case, would you please walk us through the initial legal battle, beginning with how the film studios had access to your script, and then how you became aware of the copyright breach in the late 90s regarding Terminator and the Matrix?
It was quite easy. Well, I was at USC graduate school, University of Southern California. I was working for the studios at the time, Columbia Pictures. I used to work for Channel 13 with an Oscar award-winning producer, Perry Miller-Dedo. I've written several books, and I'm a screenwriter also, as well as an author, a poet, a producer, and a paralegal. So I'm at USC. I'm writing. And I'm looking for George Lucas because I saw Star Wars in New York in 1977 when it came out. And I'm looking for George Lucas over at 20th Century Fox because on the screen credit of Star Wars, it says Lucas was the director. Didn't know Lucas was the owner. Just knew that I wanted him to direct my work. What I wrote was The Second Coming of the Christ, The Evolutions of Consciousness, Man versus the Machine. And I had my work copyrighted because I'm a paralegal. So my copyrights were 81, 83, and 84. And like I was saying, I wanted Lucas to direct my work. So I knew he was at 20th Century Fox. I sent my script and my book to 20th Century Fox. To make a long story short, one of the executives over there, Susan Mesbeck, stole the work, took it to her friend, Gail Ann Hurd. Gail Ann Hurd got James Cameron. They went over to Roger Corman and started working for him, and some of them went to Paramount. That's how Paramount got involved with the film. Because Gail Ann Hurd and Susan Mesbeck, who was a vice president from 20th Century Fox, moved over to Paramount. Anyway, they were the ones who first stole my work, and they created the Terminator. They adapted my script and my book, copyrighted script, copyrighted book, and created the three Terminator movies that you saw immediately. In 1984, the first one came out. Paul and Ellison did not write the Terminator. They James Cameron stole two of his black and white Out of Limits stories, Demon with a Glass Hand and The Soldier. And it was nothing but teleplay, about $85,000 worth of teleplay that they stole from Paul and Ellison. But they paid Hall Ellison off and gave him some credit. But when you steal copyrighted work and they stole mine and his, it invalidates your copyright. So James Cameron and Gail Ann Hurd never had a copyright. You can look at Docket 282 and you will see all they had was assignment. They put my script and my book under a dummy shell company that had no assets, meaning no money, called Pacific Western, and they transferred it to Hemdale Films, but without the owner's signature, it's called a RICO enterprise. A RICO is a criminal enterprise, meaning you're passing stolen work around and that you don't own. And so the RICO or the criminal statutes come into play and go to jail at 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years old.
In one of the documents, it reads, Stewart alleges that Hemdale Film Corporation, a purported RICO enterprise corporation that was used by Cameron and Hurd to, quote, effect transfers of monies and or properties received from the commercial exploitation of intellectual property rights. Hemdale filed a bankruptcy petition in 92, which Stewart alleges was motivated in bad faith for purposes of discharging any or all claims of creditors. This is a vehicle for being able to use...
Money laundering. Yeah, money laundering.
Gotcha.
It's just like when a drug dealer like Guzman or Pablo Escobar go out and they got all this drug money and they run it through the bank. They run it through the bank to clean it up because it's called money laundering because it's dirty money. It's unaccountable. And you got to make it look like it was earned some kind of way through an earning channel. You know what I'm talking about, that you worked and you made this money. And that's what money laundering is, cleaning up dirty money, drug money, or criminal racketeering money, like with Al Capone and John Gotti and Whitey Bulger and Bertie Madoff, Ponzi scheme. Hundreds of millions and billions of dollars stolen.
So listeners are a little bit more familiar with this. In the United States District Court, Central District of California, Western Division, April 2003, the RICO, which stands for Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organization Act, and that action was filed then, and it can be used often for expanding the scope of a case and increasing discovery. Can you talk more about the RICO Act and that important action being used in your case?
Yeah, the RICO Act was created by the government. When you go look at the Untouchables, the old black and white Untouchables with Robert Stack playing Elliot Ness. Elliot Ness was a real guy that came in and cleaned up the Al Capone. The criminals put him into prison. He was out bootlegging, counterfeiting, drugging, doing drug deals and prostitution and all kinds of stuff, killing people, loan sharking, shakedowns of people's companies and stores. And anyway, he was put in jail under this RICO Act. It was a new law created for white-collar criminals or white-collar crimes that was in the hundreds of millions or billions of dollars. That's what it has escalated to today.
In June of 1999, you filed a written complaint with the FBI charging that the Wachowskis, 20th Century, Joel Silver, Warner Brothers, Cameron, and Hurd had infringed on your copyrights. On June 28, 1999, you notified the Wachowskis of the copyright infringement claim and threatened legal action. Can you talk about this time, and were you willing to work with them and amicably at first, or did you want to go straight in and say that you've committed a crime and there's going to be litigation here?
Well, this is the deal. It was a criminal act, and the government failed to protect my rights to due process of the law, and all the foreign countries knew this except for the American people, because they didn't want to tell the American people the truth, because you would boycott these people. You wouldn't support them. You wouldn't believe in them. If you know they were thieves, then you know they were going to steal from you. Well, what I didn't like is the movie industry was a very important industry, and it was important because the Hollywood studios and the Hollywood people cabal that was running it, they were always buying scripts and books from the people. People got to see their stories on the screen. People got to see their scripts on the screen. They got to see their live stories in their books, you know, which was a very great trade-off, because we had diversity in movies. We had some of the most phenomenal movies and some of the most phenomenal creativity in the world. But then the studios in the 80s, like 1984, when they decided to steal my script and my book and created the Terminator, these billion-dollar franchises were born. And they were so greedy and so lucrative, they started stealing from their own people, their own producers, their own actors and stars, and people like Paul Newman and Clint Eastwood and Sylvester Stallone and a whole lot of others. And everybody knows who I'm talking about in Hollywood. But most people would not file a lawsuit because they belonged to the cabal. They had to feed their families. They were thinking about their careers. They were thinking about their lives. And if they filed a lawsuit against the cabal, they would never work in Hollywood. They would get blackballed. They would end their careers. Why? Just to protect their own property that was copyrighted, where these people were stealing from them and blackmailing them to not bother them. Well, I wasn't a part of this cabal. I was a part of God's system. So I didn't care about what they had to offer. They couldn't blackball me because they had nothing that would stop my life or my livelihood. So I told them that this was bad. That to steal from the people, and that you can't continue the creativity, and that you had to end it would atrophy, because it was all dependent on being fair and getting stories and diversity from the people. It was all built on the people, and so when you steal, you atrophy yourself out of business, which they've done now. The movie theaters are empty. It's horrible because of the stealing. And that the government didn't come and protect the people copyright. Whenever you stole something from the studio, the FBI would come out and arrest you. You download 10 copies of Deadpool, the FBI would come out and arrest you. You come in with the Google glasses, the FBI would arrest you. But they would try to send the people to court. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. You can't protect the studios and don't protect the people. We both got the same copyright. You can't send a person up against a billion-dollar corporation who have stolen and made millions or billions of dollars, and they turn around and use your money against you.
Let me jump in for a second here. It's a very important point. You're saying that the federal government is actually supposed to protect your copyright.
That's right. So my copyright means me and all of us, including you. We all pay $65 or whatever the price was at the time. Was back in the day, $35 or $30-some. It's been changing the price of it. But when all of us got the same copyright, whether it's the studio, me, or everybody else, we all got the same copyright. But the government is going to go out and protect the studio's copyright, the corporations and the banks, but against you? They don't protect you? And this is what the people are not looking at. But if you don't have the copyright, you got a poor man's copyright, the government won't come in and investigate at all. I had copyrights. That's why the DOJ and the FBI came in and validated the theft. They validated the theft, but they didn't go out and arrest the people because they took slush fund payoff, the same slush fund payoff that Al Capone was paying, same that John Gotti, Whitey Bulger, the Enron executives, they all pay slush fund payoff to law enforcement, senators, politicians. They pay to play.
It makes sense in what you're saying. If they're stealing, if producers and directors and the movie industry is stealing, can you talk about how difficult it would be to write sequels and to elaborate on original talent and original script that was stolen?
Well, anybody that's a creator can continue creating their work. It's just like if you're Michael Jackson, for example, you're not going to keep doing a reboot or revamp of something you did 20 or 30 years ago. You're not going to keep doing the same old dance that, you know, the real creators, they continue with new pressure, new stuff, new ideas, new music, new work. It continues. But when people steal, they kill things out like they did with Matrix 2 and 3. They couldn't write the Matrix, so they killed it out. Who kills a billion-dollar franchise with Neo and Trinity? You kill them out, and you claim you created it, and then you kill it out, and 2 and 3 is garbage, and I had to make it into a dream so that Neo and Trinity never died, that they wake up and the continuations of the Matrix. It continues on, but newer and fresher and greater. And this is what they were doing. This is why all the sequels and stuff that they stole from the real creator, it was garbage. And the fans, they come in, they say, that's not the real Star Wars. That's not the real Matrix. That's not the real Terminator. That's not the real story. And they're disappointed, the fans. And I didn't want that. That's why I fought so hard for the people and for them to continue to buy for the people. But the executives and all of them in Hollywood, the cabal, was saying, well, why do we need to pay anybody when we get to steal and we can get some of our flunky writers, troll writers, to write something that they think it may be, and then we could fool the people, and it's called consumer fraud, because I can't give you an Apple, but maybe I can give you an Apple Jack. I can't give you a Gucci, but maybe I can give you a Gucci-rini. I can't give you a Nike, but maybe I can give you a Nike. But it won't be a Nike. This is what I'm talking about. It's horrible, because you're paying over $1,000 for an Apple phone, but you're not getting an Apple phone for $1,000 or more. You're getting an Apple Jack. You're getting jacked. This is what I was fighting for the people, for diversity, so we could have great movies, and the movie theaters would be filled to the brim like they were before when the studios used to pay for this diversity, when they used to pay for incredible stories, made incredible movies.
Mm-hmm. How common is this? Do you often see other people in your situation who have had their work lifted, stolen, or redrafted and not compensated, or other copyright infringement cases?
It is a ton of them. Let's go to Avatar. That's a great example. I'm glad you brought it up. James Cameron stole from 12 different people. As fast as a crooked judge could shut down a case, dismiss the case, they would appeal. And this is why you haven't seen any Avatar in 9 years. The first Avatar came in 2009. James Cameron had been promising you an Avatar for 9 years. He's been working on it. Don't take no 9 years. He doesn't own Avatar. He stole from 12 different people. If you don't believe it, Google it and pull up the court cases. It's the same judge that they hired on my case in 2005, Judge Margaret Morrow. They're still using her to dismiss people's cases. She dismissed my case. The crooked lawyers on my case, four law firms, did not put in the evidence, did not prevent me from going to my own hearing and deposition. It's all in the federal courts in 2007, which I won in 2014 in the federal courts of Utah. It is validated by two federal judges, what they did over in California, on the first case where I had a RICO. They were scared of going to jail. They offered me money to shut the RICO case down in California, and I told them no. I wanted some of them to go to jail or send a message to stop stealing from the people. It is tons of credible people. Their books have been stolen. Their scripts have been stolen. Their life stories have been stolen. Television shows have been stolen. Tati Ali is one of the actresses. The View or The Talk with those girls on it, that's her work.
Sophia, getting back to your case, you dealt with a lot of interference, and there was an effort to sabotage your case. There were four attorneys that you hired that were also paid by Warner Brothers to interfere with you. Can you talk about how that happened and what they did?
When the government had validated the theft on my case in 2003, they gave me paperwork, they validated the theft, but they refused. The U.S. Attorney's Office called me up and wanted me to lie about the case. I said, no, I'm not going to lie about it. And then they refused to arrest them because they got paid off. And I'm going to tell you their names because I don't mind telling their names because it's all true. It was Gail Ann Hurd and Greg Diamond. They were the head people over this. Elizabeth Stephen was a prosecutor, and they were over the U.S. Attorney's Office in Salt Lake City, Utah. And they're the ones who put the FBI to work, and they started investigating. Even the New York City headquarters got involved. Also, the Los Angeles FBI got involved. And also, the Detroit FBI got involved. It's all validated on paper and docket 282. Look at the evidence. It's also in the Matrix Third Eye book. It's all being validated. It was a theft case. They investigated it, but they did not put these people in jail because the U.S. Attorney's Office got bought out. And when they got bought out, I knew I had to do something. So what did I do? I filed a case over in California with the FBI. Some of them are good people because it's commingling everybody. Good judges, bad judges. Good lawyers, bad lawyers. Good cops, bad cops. Good FBI agents, bad FBI agents. The good FBI agents told me that I could file the case where the victim discovered the crime where the crime actually took place or where the victim lives. So I was living in Utah at the time because I came from a military law enforcement family. You heard it right. Military law enforcement family. I got cousins and brothers and sisters who are FBI, marshals, police, correction officers, and others, and military, and all the branches just about. I filed a RICO case in California, and they couldn't beat the RICO because Bruce Isaac, Warner Brothers attorneys, and Fox, he told me Fox and Warner Brothers sent him, and they wanted to pay to shut the RICO case down because they couldn't beat the case. They were going to go to jail. And I told them, no, I'm not going to do it. Then all of a sudden, there come four law firms out of nowhere coming to ask, can they help me? Well, I knew that maybe one or two may be crooked, but I never in my wildest dream would think that all four law firms would be crooked. One law firm was a Pasadena law firm, Gary Brown. Michael Stoller had two, a Hidden Hills and a Beverly Hills law firm. Dean Webb, the RICO specialist, he had a Washington State law firm. And Jonathan LaBelle, he had a New York law firm. And they went in there, and my first judge was Terry J. Hatter Jr. And he was a good judge that was with Martin Luther King during the Civil Rights era. How do I know this? Because several people besides the late Johnny Cochran came to ask for my case. And the late Johnny Cochran told me all about Hatter, because when he asked to do my case, and Johnny Cochran will not do your case unless he calls you up personally and asks for it, and that's what he did. And he asked me who was my judge on the case, and I said Hatter, and he said, yeah, he knew Hatter. And then what they did was Hatter had a son that was an attorney, and they wanted to get Hatter off the bench because they know they couldn't win the case with Hatter. So they got Hatter off the case by hiring his son. The defendants hired his son, paid him money, and didn't even use him. But Hatter, being an honest judge, it's a conflict of interest for a judge's son to be defending the defendants and him on the bench. He had to recuse himself. And that's when they put their girl, Margaret Morrow, on the case. She had already shut down and won a case for James Cameron. She was a liberal. A lot of people didn't like her because she did not represent the people. She felt like the rich people should have everything and the middle class and poor people should have nothing. And those were dangerous views, and they did not like her. But she was a Clinton appointee, and she was the one that shut the case down for James Cameron. And James Cameron started using her in every one of his cases. If you don't believe it, look up the cases on all his theft. James Cameron has admitted, he and Quentin Tarantino, that they are thieves. James Cameron can't even write. He never created no Matrix, no Terminator, no Sarah Connor character or no Terminator. He created nothing. You can look up in the copyright. There's no source work. He and Gail Ann Hurd, they never written a book. They can't even write. And what little bit that was in it in the courts on James Cameron, was talking about witchcraft.
Yeah, I was surprised when you pointed me to that in the 282 document. And witchcraft, it was a skinwalker, essentially, is what they alluded to something shape-shifting.
Exactly. A shape-shifting skinwalker. Exactly. Witchcraft.
Instead of a robot, instead of a Terminator robot. Sophia, let's get into the document 282, if you don't mind. I think that reveals a lot of the copyright infringement, specifically the characters.
I wanted people to know that the Oracle was created because of myself. So the Oracle's prophecy is heard in the future by the Terminators, the machine, that a baby is going to be born that's going to destroy them in the future. So Matrix and Terminator is one, but they were divided into two franchises, and to make it look like it was two separate things going on, when Terminator End Time Revelations go right into the Matrix. Matrix is a Latin word, 7,000-year-old word for the woman's womb. It's mentioned in the King James's Bible and Scripture five times, three times in Exodus, two times in Numbers. Neo, the one, is an anagram, N-E-O-O-N-E. Jesus, John the Revelator called Jesus the one, N-E-O-O-N-E, one and the same. Neo, the one, a sneaky way of calling him the one. And it's about time travel, because the Terminator hears the Oracle prophecy about this baby, so they got to kill the mother. So Sarah Connor is Neo's mother. So the Terminator is time traveling to the past to kill Sarah Connor. And what do? They come in through burning blue portals. He lands naked without shame. And he goes, and starts killing, and then he gets up, gets clothes. Go back and look at the Terminator. But he's looking for this woman. He's trying to kill her, Sarah Connor. And Kyle Reese comes from the future to protect her. And what happens is he inadvertently falls in love with her, gets her pregnant, and goes back to the future, disappears, and it's the Immaculate Conception. Because now she's pregnant with the baby Jesus. J.C., John Connors, Jesus Christ, grows up to be Neo, one and the same in the Matrix. It's the same epic story. Terminator is the prequels. Prequels meaning the beginning of the epic story. When you go into the third eye matrix, the third eye is the eye of God, because we're talking about his children born through the womb of a woman that has a seed, a soul. And we're talking about man's children who comes out of the laboratory. We're talking about clones and test tube babies and petri dish babies and gender benders, where you go in and you manipulate the genders on a baby. And these are soulless children, just like the mule cannot duplicate itself. It's a hybrid created by man in the lab. You take a horse that's big, but he's weak, and you take a donkey that's little, but he's strong, and you combine their DNA, and you create the mule, which is bigger and stronger, but he's sterile. He has no seeds. He's soulless. Created by man. And this is what you've been eating when you eat grapes that has no seeds. It's a GMO, genetically modified organism. An organism that has been where the genes has been manipulated in. Gender bender. You're eating a living thing that has no seeds. So when you eat an apple, there's no seeds. You can't spit the seed into the ground and the apple tree sprouts up. You're eating grapes that has no seeds. You're eating watermelon with no seeds. Anything that has no seed was created by man. GMOs, genetically modified organism. Organism means a living thing. A living entity has been genetically changed. Modification means change, transform, created into something else. So you're not eating something that's growing naturally from the ground, because everything that's naturally grown by God from the ground has a seed in it. If it doesn't have a seed in it, it is created by man. Because the cycle of life is continued from God through God. That means everything is born in a cycle of obedience. That means the water, the elements, which is fire, air, the sun, all of this is born in the insects, the animals, everything is born in this cycle of obedience. And anything, even if man has his children, they still have to use the womb of a woman. If a scientist go into a laboratory to create a clone, he'll take an egg and a syringe and he'll take some DNA. The DNA could come from something living or dead. Say he wants to clone a horse, and look at 60 Minutes on the cloning of horses with a polo player. You can Google it. It'll teach you about cloning, where this polo player wanted to, his horse died, but he was an award-winning horse that won him all his polo matches, and he decided to clone the horse. So he took it to a scientist, and he got an egg, he took the dead DNA of the horse and inserted it into the egg with a syringe, and then they put it in a female horse's womb, because the womb in the umbilical cord, to feed that baby, the baby has to be born just like a normal baby that's conceived by a woman, a female horse, or a female sheep. It's all the same process. Yeah, the scientists can create a womb, but they can't create an umbilical cord to feed the baby, to feed the clone, to feed the horse, a natural horse. That's why we have navels, because you see the navel was connected to the umbilical cord. When the mother ate from the dirt of the earth, she fed your body. She created the body to come out of her womb to come into the physical domain of the earth. Because God's children are three-dimensional beings. The astral body, which is the spirit body that you see, the virtue body that I introduced in the Matrix, is going up and down the telephone lines while their physical bodies are asleep. This is why the doctors will perform an abortion up until the 11th week, but at the 12th week, they're killing a living soul, because for 11 weeks, all it is in a woman's body when she gets pregnant is nothing but blood, water, and spirit. Blood, water, and spirit mean the astral form. But at the 12th week, the body is being formed for 36 weeks and 9 months, the physical body that comes into the earth. Well, the soul, which is the third body, is called magnetism, vibration, energy, attaches itself to the body at 12 weeks. So if a doctor performs an abortion at 12 weeks and after, he's killing a living soul. This is what they were arguing about, and what you guys, they never explained the details like I'm explaining it to you. So you couldn't understand why would abortion be right or wrong. It depends on the level of weeks.
The womb reference was also taken in the first movie, Matrix, 1999, where the character Neo, he's in the pod. So you have that reference right there. But there are so many other elements of the infringing work, especially with the cast of characters. And I just wanted to go over a few of them so listeners get an idea. For example, in your book, The Third Eye is the book that the manuscript that we're referencing here for the main foundation of the Terminator and Matrix. The character, the one in the Matrix 1 and 3, is Icon, your character.
It's the same character, because there was only my work was the source work. So when a kidnapper steals your baby and they give him a fake name, or they reverse his name, they can't be given any credit. It doesn't make it theirs. If somebody steals your car and it was black and they painted red, they can't be given the car because they painted it red. There's no credit there.
I have a feeling. So, I have a feeling, Sophia.
I'm just being truthful.
I have a feeling.
That's what kidnappers do. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I had a feeling that you were waiting for me to make that mistake, because I've made it before in past conversations with you. I want to get through this, but the list of characters, but what you just said there is extremely important, because it is something in the back of our minds, or it's subconscious. We don't really understand the nature of theft. But getting back to this, the other character in your book, The Third Eye, excerpts, the young 200-pound muscular, got abilities. He's the same character as Tank in the infringing work, The Matrix. Kev, young, muscular, 230 pounds, APOC, same characteristics. Trifina,
Yeah, Trinity. Go on.
And that's Trinity, right? That's Trinity. Trev, slender, warm-hearted, well-loved, young, that's Mouse. There's so many other references. Can you go back to what you were mentioning about the nature of theft here and the stolen car quote?
Well, a lot of people, it's kind of horrible that you subconsciously don't want to believe the truth, but everybody have dealt with theft, and stealing is the same. It's just the degrees of stealing. I mean, somebody's wearing your coat to school and all they did was put some patches in it or took the patches off. But under the label, your mom put your name under the label. So when you go into the principal's office, this is your coat. You know, because thieves do that. They are daring. They'll steal your car and paint it another color, but they can't get rid of the VIN number. The VIN number checks out with the motor vehicle and it shows that you own it. They can steal your house and be in there. But when you go to the county clerk's office, you own the deed to the house. What was stolen from me was in the millions and billions of dollars. But you all have experienced different levels of theft. Some people have even experienced the same million and billions like myself. Then others on other levels or degrees. But it's all the same. Theft is theft. James Cameron and Gail Ann Hurd and Andy and Larry Wachowski never put anything in there to swear under oath. They put assignments. If you think I'm joking, look at Docket 282. They never had any copyrights. And if they tried to get a copyright, it would be invalidated because once you stole or you admitted stealing from Harlan Ellison, well, that automatically invalidated whatever you had. You don't have it.
The Document 282 that we were going over, that includes the 35 exhibits that you brought into the case. Can you talk about that particular court case and the resulting ruling?
Yeah, people need to know something. The defendants, Andy and Larry Wachowski, James Cameron, Gail Ann Hurd, Joel Silvers, Warner Brothers, and 20th Century Fox, they never won anything in California. Some of them were so scared of the RICO, and I can give this to anybody, the transcript, the California transcript, where you can see it with your own eyes. They terminated out of the case before the judge's ruling came down. They were so scared and afraid of going to jail, they terminated it out. So when I was in Utah, I first filed a case against the four law firms that had sabotaged me. It was a malpractice fraud case because they had defrauded me out of billions of dollars. So I took it to Utah. From California. So all this old stuff that y'all are seeing around on the internet is the California case. It's been dead and gone for a long time. They didn't win anything. I didn't lose anything. And if you don't believe me, look at the Utah transcript where they come in, the Utah transcript on their own volition, meaning on their own, they come in and they ask the judge for the default judgment and the money. Because they didn't get any money and they didn't win any summary judgment in California. Because if you won money in a summary judgment in a California case, there would be no need for you to come and enter yourself in the Utah case and ask for the same thing. They entered through the judge's law firm. The judge's law firm is called Snow. There has never been any lawsuit filed against me, no slander, no defamation, nothing. And it's been 15 years. And I told the judge in my legal brief that if he gave them the default judgment and the money, he was going to go to jail with them. Because when you enter a judge's law firm, you're fixing the case. You're paying the judge to fix the case. A judge cannot take any money while he's on the bench of a case. They asked for the default judgment, and why they didn't get the default judgment and the money was because they entered through the judge's law firm. And that's illegal because when people would do payoffs, they don't do the payoffs, flush fund payoffs like you would normally think because the DOJ and the FBI would come in and then bust you. So they always got to make it look like they're hiring out work for hire, but they're really doing flush fund payoffs. So if they want to hire a lawyer for some criminal work, they will hire him out for some fake work, but they're paying him to do a illegal acts. But when the IRS or the government or the FBI look at it, well, it looked like he was hired for a job and he did that job. But this is their way of doing undercover illegal stuff. So when you enter into a judge's law firm, you're paying the judge off to fix the case. But it looks like you're hiring legal service and going through that law firm and using the judge's lawyers of that law firm. Do you see? It looks legitimate to people who do not understand criminal acts.
Can you give us a conclusion of what had happened in the 2014 ruling?
Docket 283, the first judge did a recommendation, but then the other judge came back and did a ruling on it. That means it's a fact that the Matrix and Terminator came from the Third Eye book and script, and that my attorney sabotaged me in California and prevented the evidence from being entered in, and that they had cost me billions of dollars. And so I was able to put in $3.5 billion in liens, and it's against the law, federally a legal thing to put you in jail if you put liens on people who do not owe you money. So I entered these liens in. They were validated by three CPAs that were worth $75,000, $25,000 each. It was three of them. They validated I was owed $4.7 billion from the defendants, Warner Brothers and James Cameron, Gail Ann Hurd, and Andy and Larry Wachowski, and 20th Century Fox. The judge's ruling validated that I owned the Matrix and Terminator movie franchises. That was the ruling, and I won the default judgment, and I won the money that was given to Warner Brothers in the California case. So that means that if they had won, they would have got the money, and they would have got the default judgment, but they lost.
Thank you for summarizing this arduous, drawn-out litigation. I can't imagine the strength it had taken. I want to shift into some of the elements of your book. Can you talk about the third eye and some of the prophetic concepts that are materializing as human society drifts without proper navigation into the digital age? The life imitating art examples could be seen as the Hadron Collider, reality-shifting quantum computers, the so-called smart cities, the nanotechnology boom, covert stalking programs attacking dissidents, and just recently a Chinese sex robot firm making cyborgs with moving limbs, and they're selling 50% of the dolls to the United States. What stage are we in the context of your book?
Well, my book was written in 1980, and that's almost 30-some years ago. And in that book, I was talking about the Illuminati, the Trilateral Commission, the Federal Reserve, the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. And I'm talking about body scanners and food scanners that you're using right now. But I was talking about them in 1980. See all these drones that they're using now, different kind of drones. Well, I was talking about this in 1980 while I'm at USC, but I've gone past all of that, and this is what we're going into, the artificial intelligence that the Matrix and Terminator was showing you. I'm talking about where it's going to go, where they're going to be able to now, you don't going to need any fake passports or paper passports. Nobody's going to be able to fake anything, because now when you go into the airports, they're going to have scanners that are going to scan your bones, your DNA, your pulse, and everything, your vitals, how much weed you got in your body, how much over-the-counter drugs you have, or prescribed drugs in your body, the whole nine yards. They're going to have your teeth. They're going to have, you know, your dentals, so they can identify you, retinal scans, fingerprints, the whole nine yards. You're going to have a universal card that can be swiped like a credit card with a chip in it. It's going to have your bank account information. It's going to have your DNA. It's going to have all your information in it. So now if you get stopped by a drone cop, that's what you're going to get stopped by, a drone cop. They're not going to have a physical cop to come anymore and get shot up or killed or do any killing. They're going to have drones that come in and scan you, and then they're going to send a real physical cop to come and take your driving license, because this drone is going to see if you got any guns or if you're dangerous, if you're a terrorist. They're going to do a retinal scan on your whole body, DNA, facial, the whole nine yards, and they're going to know who you are. They're going to send that information out. You're going to check out. They're going to send a physical cop over. He's going to take your universal card, swipe it on his little computer. It's going to drop out a receipt. They're going to give you that receipt, and you're going to go on about your business and your license, your universal card, because now there are no more courts. There are no more judges. You become your own judge, jury, and executioner. Because this is the future. This is where the machines, the AI, the artificial intelligence has advanced. The system that we know now is a burden. It's too expensive for the cops, the correction officers, and everything for you to be in prison, the food, taking care of you, medical, and all this. Now they're going to create the virtual penal system. It's in the Matrix 4 book, where they're going to bring you in on a gurney, and they're going to put a microchip in the delicate part of your body, your brain, where you can't take it out without getting brain damage, and it's going to be a tracker to track your every movement. They're going to let you go, but now VI satellites, the satellites are going to be tracking your every movement, and they're going to zoom in on you and videotape you committing a crime. Then they're going to send a transporter, a drone transporter, because now the drones have changed. They have evolved. They've transformed. Now they got giant transformers, you know, that are drone transporters. They may have a ship, drone ship that they send, open up like a giant claw, suck you in, sedate you on your way back to Homeland Security. Because they know that the Gen X and the millennials, they grew up on the computers. They're geniuses and prodigies and phenomenal. So they don't want you tampering with this drone transporter. They're going to put you to sleep, sedate you. You're going to come in, and Homeland Security is going to pull you on a gurney. They're going to put these virtual rings around you, white laser rings, around one around each arm, hand, and around your body, one or three around your body. But everybody knows that you're in jail now. You can walk around the public. You can talk. People will totally ignore you, or they can talk to you. But if you snatch your purse, it activates the ring, it'll cut your hand off, and it'll stop you from bleeding. You run from Homeland Security or SWAT or whoever they send for you, police, it'll activate the rings, it'll cut your leg off or cut your hands. There'll be no more shootings. These rings, when you go home, they will rescind. But soon as someone comes over to your house, they'll come back on. And when you step out the door, you'll have them back on. Because now you're a threat. You're in prison. You're in jail. But if you can't control your own abilities and your own desires, and you want to continue to do evil, then you will activate the rings if you can't control your behavior in the future. This is where it has escalated, where your choices have been taken from you with these virtual penal systems. They have motion sensors all over everywhere. They have videos and drones that look just like animals, drones that look like insects, drones that look like your pet dog, seeing everything you do. Right now, there is no privacy. And in the future, it gets even greater. That's what I'm showing in the Matrix 4, what you need to get prepared for. This is why they allow these movies and visionaries such as myself, prodigies, come out with these products to get you ready for what's coming. So you can adjust to it, so you won't be afraid of it. Just like when you saw the Minority Report, just like when you saw the Matrix and the Terminator, to get you ready for what's coming.
Or resist.
Yeah, well, if you resist, I'm telling you what's going to happen to you. Because that's in the book.
I mean, resist the systematic stripping down of rights and human free will.
This is the Matrix. They can plug you in with an illusion, with a program to make you give up your free will or give the wrong choices. It's like you take the red or the blue pill. You've been red pilled. or you took the blue pill and you don't want to see the truth. And you want to go on like you are. You take the red pill and you see how deep the rabbit hole goes, and you fix out another plan for yourself. But they cannot take your free will. I repeat, they can only create false evidence appearing as real. That's what fear is. They will create fear, false evidence appearing as real, to get you to make a choice. It could be a right choice or a wrong choice. But that's all they can do. They can create a program, matrix, and plug you in, and you think that you're doing right, and you're delusional.
In the Matrix 4 manuscript, you reference that agent patrols were on the lookout for anyone exhibiting telepathic abilities and other gifts, which would alert the agents that some humans might be unplugged or have escaped from the confines of the Matrix. We recently had a guest on that discussed her psychic gifts and the and potentially because of those gifts, she was a target for organized harassment. Can you talk about the targeting as a theme and why you suspect these gifts are a threat?
Well, these gifts are a threat because if you go back into the Bible, the first coming of the Christ, what I wrote was the second coming of the Christ in Revelations, that said he was going to come back in the future. And I wrote the story Matrix and Terminator, what happened and why he needed to come back, and why he needed to give you that encouragement. Because when you look at these people with these gifts, it all started in the first coming. They were killing all these male children that was exhibiting unusual gifts. That's right. Because these indigo kids and these crystal kids will have the gift to change everything. They will invent and create new metaphysical work and alien technology, such as myself, that I'm creating, that will supersede the illusions of the Matrix. So you see what I'm talking about? That will unplug people so they can make the right choices. And so they are afraid of these children. You'll see a lot of them that Marvel was talking about, the X-Men, and when you see all these movies, they're talking about these children. But these children go way back in the Bible when they first was looking for the Christ child, Jesus, when they first was looking for him.
If listeners want to learn more about you and your work, where can they go?
They can go to my website and get my books, their e-books, their physical books, matrixterminator.com. You can Google me, Sophia Stewart. You can go to amazon.com and put in Sophia Stewart's books. Those in foreign countries, you can get my books off of Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart. And in Atlanta, Georgia, Madu Bookstores, you can go in and get physical books. But they're on demand at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, and Nook Press.
MatrixTerminator.com. Sophia Stewart, it's been a pleasure speaking with you and learning about your story, your case, the real history of the Matrix and Terminator. Thank you so much for being on In Other News.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again Monday, 11 p.m. Visit In Other News Radio for archives and more information about the guests.